Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. It's a welcome return of my guest, Kevin Ross Emery, or I should say Dr. Kevin Ross Emery. He is an author of many books. He has since the 1970s been a respected professional psychic, and today he serves as a counsellor, coach or medical intuitive. And since I last spoke with him about a year ago, he's actually set up a healing centre, which we're obviously going to talk about. So welcome to the programme, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, how are you? I just looked it up. We're within 2 weeks of the year mark.
Well, there you are.
Last October at the end of the month.
Right.
So
go ahead. So it's very good to have you back again, because I associate you with an excellent program. But for the benefit of people that might not have listened before, if they did, are not aware of your background, would you just like to explain how your life changed, I guess, quite dramatically in 1994 when you were told to sell everything and go on the road?
Ah, that story. There are so many of them.
Right.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to actually go just a little bit before that, which is that I had got very clear messages in 1990 that it was time to walk away from a long-term stint in the corporate world and return to my roots. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting, because returning to my roots meant going back to not only where I had grown up, but to go back to a very core thing I had gotten at a very young age, which was my grandmother's message to me about my intuitive abilities. I don't know if you remember this story or not, but when I was 4 years old, I played a game with my grandmother. I told her what she looked like when she was my age, how she wore her hair, the name of her best friend, and I sang her the song that they sang when they played together. And she said, "Kevin, you have a gift, and it's a gift from God, and people will tell you that it's wrong or that it's bad or that they don't believe you. But as long as you have a gift from God, everything will be okay." And based on that, what happened was that, I always knew that this thing, which, we call psychic abilities or whatever, was a gift, and I was supposed to do something with it. So when I got that very life-changing message in 90 that said it was time to return to my roots, I knew exactly what it meant. You know, I had gone to school and had gotten traditional degrees and was working in the corporate environment. I was quote-unquote a suit. But interestingly, as a teenager, I'd worked as a professional psychic before I became a real person. So, and I give you that backstory because when it was time for me to kind of return and return to my roots and do this work, Michael, one of the things that happened was that there's still quite a bit of, that people that do psychic work, flashing neon palms and crystal balls and back alleys and crossing palms with silver. And I came, I had degrees in business and psychology, and I came from a corporate background, and I was very clear that when I launched my first business that it was a business, that this was a spiritual business, and that I was offering a service, and that it had a need. And I created a practice, and, I was working with a partner at the time, and she was also doing the same kind of work. And when we joined together to create our first business together, I said, within 9 months, I want to have an office in the downtown of the area that I lived, and I wanted to have a receptionist and somebody booking appointments, and within a year, and it happened within 9 months. So when I got the message to go on the road, I had a pretty full-time practice working as a spiritual coach and counselor. I had evolved. I went back and I started doing some psychic readings again through shops and things as a way of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Now, you have to picture this. We're talking 1991, 1992. you go into this little New Age metaphysical crystal store with music and incense and all of that stuff. And there I am sitting in the back corner in a three-piece suit with an attaché pages working on my marketing plan and creating brochures and, you know, launching a business. And I'm the psychic you just paid money to come see. And in that, you know, again, I was very clear about a level of professionality, a level of how I move through the world and what it was I was to do. And I very quickly discovered that people can very often give their power away to psychics, just like they give their power away to the doctors and the lawyers and, you know, all the authority figures. That psychic is a kind of authority figure, and they kind of go and say, here, let me... You know, you make my decisions. You tell me what's on going on. You know, you – and that there was – it was very disempowering. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I was well – I was too, at that point, well-educated, well-schooled, well-trained, and really felt as though that my gifts were here to help empower people, to help bring people into a better place with who they are, maybe help them develop their own gifts or have their own epiphanies or insights and to work with them. And so I completely turned the town that I lived on its ear, the town I moved back to, where there was a plethora of psychics who, you know, I'm not saying they were bad people, but, you know, tended to allow themselves to be pigeonholed into the, oh, am I going to meet the man of my dreams? Type of things. And I remember one particular story always of that was a defining moment for me, of this woman coming in and sitting down and saying to me, I want to know if I'm going to get my is my boyfriend coming back to me? And I always hated questions like that, you know, but I was like, I was sitting there and I got very quiet, and I said to her, I was like, he's not a very nice person, is he? Oh, well, you know, he can have some, he has a drink, you know, he can drink sometimes. And I was like, he was mean to you. And she's like, well, you know, only when he was drunk. And I said, he used to hit you. Well, you know, but he always apologized. I said, he put you in the hospital once. And she goes, well, it was an accident. I said, the question isn't, is he coming back? The question is, why do you want him? Why do you think you deserve this? I think we need to be looking at something else. And the woman just kind of looked at me, and she goes, well, because I love him. And I said, no, you don't love him. You hate yourself. And the woman just kind of looked at me with these big eyes, like, what do you mean? You know? And that was kind of like, no, I can't do this. I can't sit at a table and, you know, have silver cross my palm to tell you, first of all, the future's not in granite. What is most likely to happen? What is, you know, this is not what it's about. It's about, I have a gift to be able to give people insights and guidance, and part of my gift is my intuitive. Part of it is my intellect. Part of it is all of the skills that I've developed through the years, my natural gifts, my tools, and things like this, to help you become more of who you're here to be. So I had got my hands around it. I had my office. I had my secretary. I lived on a house on the water on the coast of Maine. I was enjoying my life, and I got this message one day. I was walking across my office. I was walking towards the only door in the room. I was on the third story. There was no way to get in. Second story. There was no way to get in or out of my office, you know, unless you scaled the wall and, you know, broke into the window. And I heard this voice behind me, and the voice is just as clear as your voice is now, only actually a little clearer and a little louder. And it said, sell everything and go on the road. And I stopped, and I knew that voice. And that's the voice you don't argue with. And I went, okay, why? You know, I mean, you're allowed to ask questions. I was like, because I need you there. I'm like, okay. And a few months later, I put a few personal things in storage, some, you know, artwork and things with history, photo albums. I had sold everything else. I had left. I was coming to the end of a long-term relationship anyways. I mean, I was already on its last legs, so we folded down the relationship. I sold everything, let go of my house, let go of my practice, and went on the road for 2.5 years. in complete faith that this is what I was supposed to do. And in that time, I began doing what has ever since then been one of the cornerstones of my work, which is I got this image that when I was doing that, that I was weaving a web of light. And I have had as one of my websites, one of my cornerstone websites since 1994, 95, webofLight.com. And that it was very clear that part of what I was here to do in this lifetime was to weave a web of light. And, you know, on my 2.5 years on the road, I ended up having three audio tape series come out. I had two books come out. I met a new life partner that I was with for 7 years. And I made my connections. I started bringing through all of the information about the Wei Qi, which led to the shop I've opened and this healing system I teach. And I made my connections, which ended up, leading to me coming to England for the first time. So there's a long answer to your question.
Well, that's very interesting indeed. It can't be many people that have that sort of experience. But when you were told to go on the road, how did you know what it actually meant?
Well, I mean, I continued to get some clarifying information, kind of like I knew when it said sell everything and go on the road that it meant that I had done whatever I was supposed to do there. And that's a place that I've returned to many times. In fact, I was just there not too long ago again. But I knew that it meant that I needed to open up and receive guidance, you know, that I'd be told kind of where to go. One of the things I did, and I was one of the first people I knew that had one, is I actually bought one of the first edition laptops so I could go on the road and plug into phone lines and go on the internet. And it's interesting. I was way ahead of the curve on all of that. Because I had to find out how to run my life on the road. And, you know, so I got messages, you know, I put it out there. I started calling around. I started just kind of putting it out there and saying, okay, it's going to unfold. It's going to unfold. It's going to unfold. And it unfolded. Interestingly enough, I had friends I had gone and visited in Florida who said that I could come back there, and they had hosted some gatherings for me, and that the people would love to have me back. And, you know, and then from that, I got an invitation to speak at a powwow that was supposed to be the largest powwow in the Southeast, and they were going to have tens of thousands of people, and I was invited to speak at it. And I thought, oh, well, here we go. I'm going to go down here with all my belongings in my car. I'm going to speak at this powwow, and it's going to lead to a bunch of other stuff, and I guess this is what Spirit wanted me to do, and this is great and wonderful, and got everything all ready and let go of my apartment and had my goodbye parties and, you know, told my clients I could work with them on the phone, that I could do phone sessions and continue our work together. You know, I didn't desert my client practice, and got in the car and went to have a meal with my father before I left New England. And that was checking my messages, I got a message that because of some kind of technical violation, mishmash issues or whatever, the powwow had been canceled. And so I was driving somewhere with no real promise of work, a brand new car and a brand new car payment, and no idea how I was going to support myself.
Right.
The fun thing is when I went on the road, I ended up speaking at a lot of groups. I mean, in the 2.5 years, and I crisscrossed the country, and in like a year and a half, or a little year and a half or a little more, I put over 90,000 miles on my new car. Mm. But one of the messages I ended up delivering again and again was a message of faith and saying to people, standing in front of people in churches and holistic centers or whatever, and saying, let's talk about faith. You know, you say you have faith. If God came down to you in this moment and you knew it was the voice of God and God said, sell everything and go on the road, I'll take care of you, how many of you would be packing your stuff and putting out the yard sale sign? people were like,
did you get any? Did you get any replies?
Mostly horrified. Oh, yes. Well, I have kids. Well, my job. Well, what do I do about this? What do I do about that? I said, well, then don't tell me how much faith you have.
Hmm. So when you started on the road, were you initially a counselor, or did you embody the coaching and becoming a medical intuitive all at the same time?
Well, you know, my life is a spiral. Like I said, I had done professional psychic work as a teenager, and in doing that, I had actually, you know, sharpened my skills in several areas of the holistic community before I was 20, and I had done some medical intuitive work then, and I had done work with the tarot and astrology as well as being a psychic, and, you know, kind of like dabbled in a lot of different things, you know, and so when I went on the road, it was kind of like, well, you know, I started developing that, you know, how could I do readings in an empowered way? And how could I talk to people about engaging into more of a process and less of a quick fix? But I kind of adopted this attitude because I had so many different things, and I did have such complete faith, as I do, that when I sit with somebody that it will unfold.
Mm.
And so what I did is I ended up adopting an approach, which was, you know, people would say, what do you do? And I'd be like, I don't know. What do you need? Because whatever you need is what I'm going to do. And if I got information about something going on in their body or with a health issue, I would tell them. If somebody from the other side wanted to talk to them, I would tell them. You know, I might be doing mediumship and trying to do it. But I always tried to wrap something up into how can this make your life better? What can you do? You know, how can we use this information? Educating people, because I also taught. I always go back and forth. Am I a healer that teaches or a teacher that heals, you know, facilitates healing? And, you know, and at the end of the day, it's the same thing. I'm constantly teaching everybody in my life, my clients, my students, my friends, even people I meet, whenever there's an opportunity to help somebody learn something new or to have a different perspective or to stretch a comfort zone. I mean, it's just what I do. It's what I do when I walk in the room. There's no effort. I don't have to try. I don't have to think about it. I just have to be me, which is one of the reasons why the title I use is I'm a synergetic catalyst, because I just go in and I catalyze. You know, yes. and bring this. So on the road, what happened was I started having regular little areas that developed that knew me in certain lights and would talk about me. And when I would go back there, there'd be a line of people that would want to work with me. But some of them knew me more as doing medical intuitive. Some of them knew me more as a trans channel. And then, of course, I started getting in, and my book, The Lost Steps of Reiki, came out during this process, as did Experiment Earth. And then some of them knew me as a chakra healer, because I did a what I thought at the time was a blow your socks off version of chakra healing that was very different, very different than what anyone else was doing. Only to find out that this, in the last year, I have had I forget about blowing my socks off. It's now blown my legs off down to my knees, because up to my knees. As I've received lots of information and from the Wei Qi perspective of what chakras really are and are not. And in fact, that's one of the new books I'm working on, is I was very drawn that I needed to take all of this information that I got and all of the work that I did and all of this download. And I ended up teaching an intro to chakra, Wei Qi chakra healing, which was 7 9-hour days of nonstop information, and at least 65 to 70% of it is nothing like you'll find in any book out there.
Amazing. Right. And now, for the benefit of some of our listeners who might not be too familiar with what our chakras are, would you just like to explain what they are?
Yeah, I'm going to do a dual thing here. I'm going to say that chakras traditionally have been, the chakra is a Sanskrit word, which means a spinning wheel of light, spinning wheel. And chakras have been traditionally seen as energy centers, and that we have seven major chakras that go from the root of our body, our tailbone, all the way up to the top of our head, and that these are connected with all sorts of emotional bodies and systems and organs, and that they all are associated with a certain color and certain qualities within a person's life, and are spinning wheels of energy. And that's a very, what I would call a very chakra for dummies quickie of right. what we've been traditionally taught about chakras. And that, you know, the chakras have a backside where you bring energy in and a front side in which where you project energy out. And this was all the stuff that I ever read on chakras and then in the work I did. And early on, back when I was on the road and I started doing chakra healing, you know, there's always been this, oh, a chakra is open if it goes clockwise and it's closed if it goes counterclockwise. And if a chakra is closed, it's not functioning properly. And your first root chakra should be red. And if it's not red, then you want to return it to, you know, you want to turn it to red. And when I started doing my chakra healing back in the mid 90s, when I was very drawn and had this whole little area I would go to, where they couldn't get enough chakra healing from me. I mean, that's what I got known for in that little area. Mm-hmm. The first thing I realized is that clockwise, counterclockwise is not necessarily right or wrong. That it just is, and that it's a message and it's telling you something, but it isn't telling you necessarily to change it, and forcing it to change is not necessarily the correct action. Also, that the colors aren't necessarily incorrect if they're not the colors that we traditionally think. That again, that they're providing us insight and guidance and messaging, and that returning a chakra to a color or trying to force it into a color that it's not supposed to be in that moment is interfering with the person's process. And right. that's not how people were doing chakra healing back in the mid-90s. You know, it was kind of like, well, this is what healthy is. I mean, it's very interesting. In a way, it was kind of like almost a very Western approach in an interesting way now that I think about it. I haven't thought about that until I was just saying this to you. It was kind of a very Western approach, which is, oh, well, you know, the average person has, 98.6 Fahrenheit temperature. Well, if you are not 98.6, there's something wrong with you. Well, no, some people have 99. People have 98. Not everybody has 98.6, and we shouldn't be saying that somebody's sick or there's something wrong with them because they don't have the norm. And yet this was a very strong energy into the chakra stuff of this kind of thing. And so that was way back when. And so what we look at it in the Wei Qi system is that chakras are really, first of all, they're a connection. They're part of our connection, our spiritual DNA that connect us to all the past lives that we've had into the life and our soul contracts in this lifetime. They do not have a front and back that brings energy in and pushes energy out. They have the back of them actually is that it contains information about their past lives, their soul contracts they made, their agreements, the things that they're coming in to work on, and is a data source. And that really the chakras themselves are more like wisdom processing centers, that they are processing, that they are there processing experiences and trying to integrate them into wisdom, and that each chakra has a color like a color tube, which in it lies a whole plethora of colors, and different colors within that tube mean different things, and so you never have an incorrect color in a chakra. You can have a color that isn't flowing like it could be flowing, but that you have it, and that they tell you different things, they give you different messages, and that it's very layered and it's very connected to the cycles of life, and what those cycles of life are, and that each cycle of life actually has a tonality to it, and that as you go through the cycles, they build for us to be able to do what we're here to do and be what we're here to be. And that we have to, you know, if you're looking at what we call the foundation chakra, traditionally known as the root chakra, but what we were told is that foundation is a more accurate term of what it is. But if you're looking at the foundation chakra and what you're seeing is bright red, it's because you're not looking. You're seeing what's simple. You're seeing what's easy. You're seeing what a couple of thousand years of information has told us you're supposed to see. And it will be the first thing that you see if you just look, on a very surface level. But as you go deeper, you'll see lots of other things. But if you don't know to look deeper, you don't look deeper.
Right.
And then if you look deeper and you're seeing something that, quote unquote, isn't supposed to be there, then you start messing with something and trying to fix something that's not broken.
Right. Now, would you say on a vibrational level that the order of the chakras does follow a pattern where, say, if you have a red chakra, the lowest one, that as you go through the different chakras to the highest one at the crown, that the vibrational levels actually increase?
Well, each chakra has the ability to end up at the end of the day at the same vibrational level.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things, again, one of the teachings that we work with in the Wei Qi Chakra Healing is that, that this spiritual DNA that, and I see it differently. It's so interesting. I actually created a working model of the chakra system to teach my class with. Thank God for craft stores. craft stores and pipe cleaners.
Right.
But to create a prototype. But in this, each chakra has a place that it stays, and instead of looking at it as a higher or lower vibration, looking at it as parallel vibrations that all have the ability to reach the same level of height.
Right.
So don't look at it as a hierarchy. Look at it as going in a parallel way, and that they feed upon each other, and each one brings each other one up when you go through the cycle. Each one brings the other ones up. And, we look at it as that, cumin actually literally means hue man, which is God man.
Yes.
And
right.
So the journey of the chakras is bringing God to earth and man to the heavens. And it's a constant cycle up and down of the chakras of bringing God to earth and man to the heavens. And when you have really completed the day, if you've done everything right, then everything's at the same vibration.
Right, so I'm guessing that when you become more evolved, you actually, in effect, lose the lower three chakras because you're raising the vibration so high.
Well, it's not that you lose them, it's that you have them from the, you're using them in a divine way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is something very divine about foundation. It's a different perspective, Michael. It's like,
yes.
We want to divide things up in a hierarchy that says, oh, well, at some point I pass this grade and I leave this behind. But in any true journey of life, we never leave anything behind. We only integrate it.
Right.
And what we learned in the first grade, when we're in the third grade, we have a different understanding of because we've gone further along, but we don't throw away what we learned in the first grade.
Oh, indeed.
And it's no less valuable. What we learn in those bottom chakras is as equally valuable as what we learn in the top chakras. And at some point, we get a divine perspective of them so that they're all at that highest level of what they are capable of, which is always a divine level.
Right. Would you agree that if there is an imbalance in the chakras, that it's directly related to illnesses?
Oh, I would say that illnesses can be directly related to an imbalance in the chakra system. The illness does not create the imbalance. The imbalance creates the illness.
Right, yes.
Yeah, it allows the illness to take hold. And, and I'm not going to say that all illnesses have a chakra root, but when you look at it, correcting something that has created an emotional or an intellectual or a physical imbalance. Now, I'm not talking about birth. I'm not talking about birth defects. Those are soul choices. Right. We choose to come in and have the experience of certain things, things that happen at a very young age. Things that happen in the first 4 or 5 years are all pretty strongly contracted that we wanted the experience of those things in the lifetime. So that's a different reality. Now, some of those birth defects can negatively impact how the strands of the chakras may have evolved, and you have to go back in and evolve those chakra strands up to where they would have been if that birth defect hadn't been there. And it can shift on an amazing level how somebody actually interacts or works with a birth defect by doing that kind of work.
Right. Now, can I just sort of move on to your books and comment on the fact that you appear to have an affinity with children that need some sort of aid? And I'm thinking of the book you released in 2009, Managing the Gifted ADD Child.
Yeah, what got released in 2009 was actually the CD that went with the book. The book was actually released before that. But yeah, Managing the Gift, Alternative Approaches for Attention Deficit Disorder. Mm. And in fact, right now, I spoke to you last year that I was supposed to be trying to get the sequel to the book finished.
Yes.
And my year got kidnapped by, I can't even tell you what in the last 12 months, the requirements, the number, the amount of traveling I've done, the amount of clients I've seen, the amount of classes I've taught, I'm in the process of launching an online university. Mm-hmm. I moved 2,000 miles off. Everything, I moved from Maine to Phoenix, Arizona. I now live in Phoenix, and in the year that I've lived in Phoenix, I have spent less. I've never spent more than 6 weeks in a row in Phoenix. Gosh. That's how much I've traveled. So the book has been running behind, and in fact, I'm taking a 10-day retreat in a couple of weeks that is specifically to go see if I can put the finishing touches on this, plus a couple of other books that I'm working on, because all of my writing contracts are behind right now. But yes, I do have an affinity for children. And I have an affinity for those who suffer at the injustice of institutions and normality.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is always a good way to get me irritated is to punish somebody for being just who they are because they don't fit into some concept of who society or some church or some government or some family or tribal belief system says who they should be. And, of course, ADD falls squarely in that category along with some other, both children and adult groups that I work with that are kind of like, hey, excuse me, God made me perfectly the way I am. You know, get out of my face, type of thing. And oftentimes, you know, we get so browbeaten, like ADD kids get browbeaten in the fact that they've got a disability, that there's something wrong with them, that they're broken, that they need to be, that they deserve to be medicated, that they're supposed to be medicated, that they're supposed to be drugged up and dumbed down, that they're supposed to be made zombies.
Right.
And no, sorry, doesn't work that way. I know it's very profitable, and I know it allows a broken education system to stay broken. And, you know, there's lots of people that's gotten lots of money, billions of dollars off of making this a disability. Doesn't make it right.
No. Okay. Dr. Kevin, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that we were going to talk about the healing center that you've opened, and time is rushing by here. So tell us what's been happening.
Well, you know, one of the things is the Wei Qi. Wei Qi is a number of different things when I say Wei Qi. Wei Qi lived in Tibet 5,000 years ago as a Tibetan shaman. and in him and several other shaman in that area of the world received information and got a lot of things, which I look at as the crossover time between the time of Atlantis and the time of recorded history. And he received information about concerning about the nature of healing. And he looks at the nature of healing as the process of empowering one to heal oneself. That really those that are drawn to be of service, that are drawn to the healing arts of any kind, that what they should, what their primary goal should always be is to empower somebody to be self-healing. Right. And, you know, kind of give a man a fish versus teaching a man to fish. And so I, from that, from his original, from his early works, you know, much later down the road, we sprung out with things like Reiki and other things, which led to the first book, The Lost Steps of Reiki, and me taking information he gave me about the larger system that that which we call Reiki came from, and kind of bringing that out to the world. And now that's been, I've been teaching for 15 years, people the Wei Qi system of natural healing. At first I called it Wei Qi Tibetan Reiki, and then at some point realized that I just needed to take the Reiki name off of it altogether because it was just so much more extensive, and it just worked, it moved through the world in such a different way. And unfortunately, a lot of what we got as Reiki in the Western world was very westernized and was very symptom-oriented and instead of cause-oriented and was very passive instead of active. And anyone that studied any kind of Eastern healing systems or arts, clearly, you know, one thing that they all have in common is that they're very cause-oriented and that they're very much that the client participates. The client, you know, is part of it. So as I have senior students in outside of the Boston, Massachusetts area in a smaller town. It's not a small town, but a smaller town called Haverhill, Mass. Mm-hmm. I had several students that were getting ready to really go out and open practices. And at the same time, I have been taking, because I have so much curriculum, so many things I've taught through the years, so many things that, you know, whether it's information from Wei Qi or whether it's my own process as a healer and as a teacher that I taught and other people that I've come across, that I started thinking in the terms of a Wei Qi university, an online university, which we're now in the process of creating, and that would have satellite campuses and would allow people to be exposed to both my teachings along with some other people that I feel are completely that are very powerful teachers, very powerful healers, who the individuals might not get a chance to cross their path, and to do it in a satellite campus format so that the teacher could be teaching at one campus and then it would be video conference to several other campuses where there would be student teachers on the ground to help the individual actually integrate and utilize the information. So in starting that and also wanting it to be accredited and wanting to do that, I've undertaken not a small project. And, you know, I don't know, how's the economy over there? Robust, going strong, lots of disposable income on that side of the pond over there? Michael?
Yes.
Yes? Is there really?
I was going to say
my contacts in England say that your guys are going through the quote unquote same financial economy wreckage that we are over here. Anyways, the last thing that anyone would think of to open up in this financial economy and over here in the States would be a retail store. You know, they're closing left and right. Major chains are closing. Unemployment's at an all-time high. And yet, it was one of those things where I looked down, you know, a long road with a bunch of red lights on them, and every light turned green at the same moment. and I had a choice, either throw my foot on the gas pedal and say, all the lights are green, obviously I'm supposed to go, or sit there and go, oh, isn't that an interesting phenomenon, and wait for them to turn red again. And I've got a very lead foot, so I hit the accelerator. And in a matter of 4 or 5 days, the opportunity to take over a space came up. I had people that had a store that closed it down in another area because they just wanted to do wholesale, give me jewelry cases and shelving units and this and this and this. And in a matter of a few days, I went from no idea that I was going to have a retail store to owning a retail store.
Right.
But what it is the Wei Qi Healing Center and Shop, and it gives my students a place to work out of to launch their Wei Qi healing practices. It gives me a place to teach. It also fills a hole of that crossover of a place where you can go and find like-minded people and feel just go have a cup of tea and sit and feel like you're in a very beautiful, peaceful, harmonious space surrounded by good energy, and you can also get some good work done, or you can just sit there, or you might buy a crystal or buy a candle or a book or something. And that it was very needed. And again, all the green lights went into place, and we're looking to set up. I already have some interest with 4 or 5 other people to replicate the model in a franchise format at other places where I have senior students. Mm-hmm. Right. So that, you know, we're really looking. And in fact, I've got one of my students and one of my contacts that, you know, I'm talking to, and we might at some point get one of these over in Manchester, England.
Right. Yes.
You know, but kind of pulling this, and it's just another form of weaving that web of light.
Well, this sounds a very interesting project, I must admit, and I like the idea that it's open for other people, in effect, to try their own skills.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's being created so it can be a community hub. A community hub and an open resource, you know, and again, that will these, you know, the shop brings people in to, you know, maybe buy some incense or a candle or a CD or, you know, whatever, just to come in and browse, but it gives these practitioners a chance to talk about what they do, to share their energies and their philosophies and build their practice, and it starts to create this chain of satellite campuses, so when it's actually time to launch Wei Qi University, which only Spirit knows when that's going to happen, and I'm not privy to that high level of meetings, you know, it will happen, it will unfold, and it will be there, but I can see the pieces falling in place.
Right. Now, here and there, you mentioned God. The sort of $64 question here, what do you think God is?
Ah. The 64-pound question. The 64-pound
question. Yeah, 60. A bit more than that.
What is God? Well, it's interesting. First of all, I always like to let everybody know God, Goddess, Allah, Buddha, the great pumpkin, as we say in Charlie Brown land. I don't care what you call it.
Yeah.
It is that which we are part of, that it is the greater part of us, where we are all connected into an entity that is both us and not us. I look at souls as being cells in the body of something that we call God. So, right. You know, you may be a cell in God's left finger. I know that I'm a cell in the body of God, in God's right butt cheek, because I'm such a pain in the butt to everybody. I couldn't be located anywhere else.
Right.
And just like the finger, you know, the finger, like your finger is Michael, but Michael is not the finger. We are exactly. God, but God is not us, and that we're here to touch that part of us that is divine and is a unique aspect of God. And as humanity, as souls evolve, as we go through journey after journey, lifetime after lifetime, what happens is we add to the some knowledge, the some experiential knowledge of God. And so as we expand God. And as we expand our ability to have a greater capacity and a greater understanding of what God is. And to let allow that God to flow through us and be there. But even as I say that, you know, we have never had a planet that is in more disrepair, that is in more violence, you know, in the name of God than ever.
Right.
You know, we have all of these, you know, little godlings running around, or these little people attached to these little godlings that, you know, have gods that have to hate and be violent, yeah, and, you know, have to be looking Indeed. For, you know, it's so funny. And I'm going to, if it's all right with you, 2 days ago, I actually wrote a poem, because I'm always writing poetry.
Right.
I mean, well, I shouldn't say I'm always doing that, but I have 3 or 4 books of poetry out. And
yeah.
I actually wrote a poem on that was kind of connected to this. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, as long as it's not too long, because I would like to give you a minute or so to give out your website and details. But yes, carry on.
Yeah. Well, that's mydrkevin.com, mydrkevin.com. Go to mydrkevin.com and you can contact me. You can find out about me. You can go to Amazon or go there or go to the publishing company and get my books and CDs and DVDs. But right. A couple of days ago, as I was driving across the Southwest, because I'm on a road trip between Maine and Phoenix, going through several places, I just wrote this poem came out. It's called Pray. You pray that I should pray as you pray. Yeah. You pray I should kneel and bow, scrape and worship at the altar of your God. I pray that you love your God and your God loves you, as my God loves me. For my God loves me just as I am, and requires me to be nothing or do nothing I am not. Nor am I required to bring any converts or hate anyone who does not love him as I do.
Hmm. Is it, that's it, is it?
Yep, that's it.
Oh, short and sweet. Yeah, yes, very, very much to the point there. Yes, I like it. As I said, I think short and sweet is the way to describe it. Now, we've got about possibly 4 minutes left, and I want the last couple just to close the program and give out details of next week's guest, which won't take me long. So in a roughly over 2 minutes, have you got a message for all our listeners?
Yes. My message to your listeners, I have two if I could get them in. The first one is, has to do with that whole idea of ADD. If you have somebody, if you are ADD or you have somebody in your life who is ADD, remember it is part of the evolutionary process. It is not a disease. It is not a disability that you or the ones you love just learn and process information differently. It does not make you less able, and do not allow anybody to disable you because you do things differently. My second message is, everyone comes to the earth to be a gift to humanity. All of us are here. And when you become, allow yourself to be 100% who you are, you are being a unique face of God, which is a gift to the world. When you are anything less, you cheat not only the world, but you cheat yourself of your experience of being here.
Hmm. And I think one might add there that because we go through a series of lives, each one hopefully enables us to evolve just that little bit further.
Yeah, and again, it's about you know, so often we have this human foible to want to hierarchy things instead of looking at things as just parallel and different.
Right.
Yeah, we all have something to bring, and some lifetimes we come in to be a bad guy, and it's hard for the people that are around us as we're alive, and it might be hard for us who on some way know that
or we're being a bad guy, or maybe we don't know we're being a bad guy. But it's just a parallel experience. Not a better or worse one, just a different one.
Okay. Now, give me a one-minute answer. Do you believe in the power of prayer?
Oh, absolutely. Right. The name of that poem was Pray. But, yeah, I do believe in the power of prayer. In fact, there are times when people, when I was doing Reiki, would say, you know, that I would say, don't do Reiki on people who that doesn't work for them. They don't believe in it. I said, just pray for them. Pray for them. Pray that whatever is in their highest and best good. I also believe that prayer must be done as a dialogue. Yeah. The biggest problem we have with most traditional religions is they teach it as a monologue. And we should never pray for things. We should always pray for guidance, for insights, for something that allows us to step into more of who we are here to be. I believe the prayer is very powerful, and I pray on a regular basis.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you there, Dr. Kevin. It's been a terrifically interesting chat with you, and I love the subjects we covered. So thank you very much for coming on. I'll hope in the near future perhaps to speak with you again. I'm sure our listeners enjoyed that. Next week, friends, I've got Karen Anderson, who's calls herself America's Animal Communicator, and she also says she has the ability to connect with human energies as well. So, again, that sounds like a very interesting program. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can join us next week. God bless you all. Thank you.